Chapter 10. His remarks on the subject of Miss Marple as we left the house were far from complimentary.
"I really believe that wizened-up old maid thinks she knows everything there is to know, and hardly been out of this village all her life. Preposterous! What can she know of life?"
I said mildly that though doubtless Miss Marple knew next to nothing of life with a capital L, she knew practically everything that went on in St. Mary Mead. Melchett admitted that grudgingly. She was a valuable witness, particularly valuable from Mrs. Prothero's point of view.
"I suppose there's no doubt about what she says, eh?"
"If Miss Marple says she had no pistol with her, you can take it for granted that it is so," I said. "If there was the least possibility of such a thing, Miss Marple would have been onto it like a knife."
"That's true enough. We'd better go and have a look at the studio."
The so-called studio was a mere rough shed with a skylight. There were no windows, and the door was the only means of entrance or egress. Satisfied on this score, Melchett announced his intention of visiting the vicarage with the inspector.
"I'm going to the police station now."
As I entered through the front door, a murmur of voices caught my ear. I opened the drawing-room door. On the sofa beside Griselda, conversing animatedly, sat Miss Gladys Cram. Her legs, which were encased in particularly shiny pink stockings, were crossed, and I had every opportunity of observing that she wore pink-striped silk knickers.
"Hello, Len," said Griselda.
"Good morning, Mr. Clement,"
said Miss Cram.
"Isn't the news about the Colonel really too awful? Poor old gentleman."
"Miss Cram," said my wife, "very kindly came in to offer to help us with the guides. We asked for helpers last Sunday, remember?" I did remember, and I was convinced, and so I knew from her tone was Griselda, that the idea of enrolling herself among them would never have occurred to Miss Cram but for the exciting incident which had taken place at the vicarage.
"I was only just saying to Mrs. Clement," went on Miss Cram, "you could have struck me all of a heap when I heard the news. 'A murder,' I said, 'in this quiet one-horse village,' for quiet it is, you must admit, 'not so much as a picture-house, and as for talkies.' And then, when I heard it was Colonel Prothero, why, I simply couldn't believe it. He didn't seem the kind, somehow, to get murdered."
"And so," said Griselda, "Miss Cram came round to find out all about it." I feared this plain speaking might offend the lady, but she merely flung her head back and laughed uproariously, showing every tooth she possessed.
"Oh, that's too bad. You're a sharp one, aren't you, Mrs. Clement? But it's only natural, isn't it, to want to hear the ins and outs of a case like this, and I'm sure I'm willing enough to help with the guides in any way you like. Exciting, that's what it is. I've been stagnating for a bit of fun. I have, really I have. Not that my job isn't a very good one, well paid, and Dr. Stone quite the gentleman in every way, but a girl wants a bit of life out of office hours, and except for you, Mrs. Clement, who is there in the place to talk to except a lot of old cats?"
"There's Lettice Prothero," I said. Gladys Cram tossed her head.
"She's too high and mighty for the likes of me. Fancies herself the country, and wouldn't demean herself by noticing a girl who had to work for a living. Not but what I did hear her talking of earning her living herself. And who'd employ her, I should like to know? Why, she'd be fired in less than a week. Unless she went as one of those mannequins, all dressed up and sidling about. She could do that, I expect."
"She'd make a very good mannequin," said Griselda. "She's got such a lovely figure." There's nothing of the cat about Griselda. "When was she talking of earning her own living?" Miss Cram seemed momentarily discomfited, but recovered herself with her usual archness.
"That would be telling, wouldn't it?" she said. "But she did say so. Things not very happy at home, I fancy. Catch me living at home with a stepmother. I wouldn't sit down under it for a minute."
"Ah, but you're so high-spirited and independent," said Griselda gravely, and I looked at her with suspicion.
Miss Cram was clearly pleased.
That's right, that's me all over. Can be led, not driven. A palmist told me that not so very long ago. No, I'm not one to sit down and be bullied, and I've made it clear all along to Dr. Stone that I must have my regular times off. These scientific gentlemen, they think a girl's a kind of machine. Half the time they just don't notice her, or remember she's there. Of course I don't know much about it, confessed the girl.
Do you find Dr. Stone pleasant to work with? It must be an interesting job if you are interested in archaeology.
It still seems to me that digging up people that are dead and have been dead for hundreds of years isn't, well, it seems a bit nosy, doesn't it? And there's Dr. Stone so wrapped up in it all that half the time he'd forget his meals if it wasn't for me.
Is he at the barrow this morning? Asked Griselda. Miss Cram shook her head.
A bit under the weather this morning, she explained. Not up to doing any work. That means a holiday for little Gladys.
I'm sorry, I said.
Oh, it's nothing much. There's not going to be a second death. But do tell me, Mr. Clement. I hear you've been with the police all morning. What do they think?
Well, I said slowly, there is still a little uncertainty.
Ah! Cried Miss Cram. Then they don't think it is Mr. Lawrence Redding after all. So handsome, isn't he? Just like a movie star. And such a nice smile when he says good morning to you. I really couldn't believe my ears when I heard the police had arrested him. Still, one has always heard they're very stupid, the county police.
You can hardly blame them in this instance, I said. Mr. Redding came in and gave himself up.
What?
The girl was clearly dumbfounded.
Well, of all the poor fish, if I'd committed a murder, I wouldn't go straight off and give myself up. I should have thought Lawrence Redding would have had more sense to give in like that. What did he kill Prothero for? Did he say? Was it just a quarrel?
It's not absolutely certain that he did kill him, I said.
But surely, if he says he has, why really, Mr. Clement, he ought to know.
He ought to, certainly, I agreed. But the police are not satisfied with his story.
But why should he say he'd done it if he hasn't?
That was a point on which I had no intention of enlightening Miss Cram. Instead, I said rather vaguely, I believe that in all prominent murder cases, the police receive numerous letters from people accusing themselves of the crime. Miss Cram's reception of this piece of information was,
they must be chumps,
in a tone of wonder and scorn.
Well, she said with a sigh, I suppose I must be trotting along.
She rose.
Mr. Redding, accusing himself of the murder, will be a bit of news of Dr. Stone.
Is he interested? Asked Griselda. Miss Cram furrowed her brows perplexedly.
He's a queer one. You never can tell with him. All wrapped up in the past. He'd 100 times rather look at a nasty old bronze knife out of those humps of ground than he would see the knife Crippen cut up his wife with, supposing he had a chance to.
Well, I said, I must confess I agree with him. Miss Cram's eyes expressed incomprehension and slight contempt. Then, with reiterated goodbyes, she took her departure.
Not such a bad sort, really, said Griselda as the door closed behind her.
Terribly common, of course, but one of those big, bouncing, good-humoured girls that you can't dislike. I wonder what really brought her here.
Curiosity?
Yes, I suppose so.
Now, Len, tell me all about it. I'm simply dying to hear.
I sat down and recited faithfully all the happenings of the morning, Griselda interpolating the narrative with little exclamations of surprise and interest.
So it was Anne Lawrence was after all along, not Lettice. How blind we've all been. That must have been what old Miss Marple was hinting at yesterday. Don't you think so?
Yes, I said, averting my eyes. Mary entered.
There's a couple of men here, come from a newspaper, so they say. Do you want to see them?
No, I said, certainly not. Refer them to Inspector Slack at the police station.
Mary nodded and turned away.
And when you've got rid of them, I said, come back here. There's something I want to ask you.
Mary nodded again. It was some few minutes before she returned.
I had a job getting rid of them, she said. Persistent. You never saw anything like it. Wouldn't take no for an answer.
I expect we shall be a good deal troubled with them, I said. Now, Mary, what I want to ask you is this. Are you quite certain you didn't hear the shot yesterday evening?
The shot what killed him? No, of course I didn't. If I had have done, I should have gone in to see what had happened.
Yes, but... I was remembering Miss Marple's statement that she had heard a shot in the woods. I changed the form of my question. Did you hear any other shot? One down in the wood, for instance?
Oh, that?
The girl paused.
Yes, now I come to think of it. I believe I did. Not a lot of shots, just one. Queer sort of bang it was.
Exactly, I said. Now what time was that?
Time?
Yes, time.
I couldn't say, I'm sure. Well after tea time, I do know that.
Can't you get a little nearer than that?
No, I can't. I've got my work to do, haven't I? I can't go on looking at clocks the whole time, and it wouldn't be much good anyway. The alarm loses a good 3/4 every day, and what with putting it on and one thing and another, I'm never exactly sure what time it is.
This perhaps explains why our meals are never punctual. They are sometimes too late, and sometimes bewilderingly early. Was it long before Mr. Redding came?
No, it wasn't long. 10 minutes? 1/4 hour? Not longer than that.
I nodded my head, satisfied.
Is that all? Said Mary. Because what I mean to say is, I've got the joint in the oven and the pudding boiling over as likely as not.
That's all right, you can go. She left the room and I turned to Griselda. Is it quite out of the question to induce Mary to say sir or ma'am?
I have told her she doesn't remember. She's just a raw girl, remember?
I am perfectly aware of that, I said. But raw things do not necessarily remain raw forever. I feel a tinge of cooking might be induced in Mary.
Well, I don't agree with you, said Griselda. You know how little we can afford to pay a servant. If once we got her smartened up at all, she'd leave. Naturally, and get higher wages. But as long as Mary can't cook, and has those awful manners, well, we're safe. Nobody else would have her.
I perceived that my wife's methods of housekeeping were not so entirely haphazard as I had imagined. A certain amount of reasoning underlay them. Whether it was worthwhile having a maid at the price of her not being able to cook, and having a habit of throwing dishes and remarks at one with the same disconcerting abruptness, was a debatable matter.
And anyway, continued Griselda, you must make allowances for her manners being worse than usual just now. You can't expect her to feel exactly sympathetic about Colonel Prothero's death when he jailed her young man.
Did he jail her young man?
Yes, for poaching. You know, that man, Archer. Mary has been walking out with him for 2 years.
I didn't know that.
Darling Len, you never know anything.
It's queer, I said, that everyone says the shot came from the woods.
I don't think it's queer at all, said Griselda. You see, one so often hears shots in the wood. So naturally, when you do hear a shot, you just assume as a matter of course that it is in the wood. It probably just sounds a bit louder than usual. Of course, if one were in the next room, you'd realize that it was in the house. But from Mary's kitchen, with the window right the other side of the house, I don't believe you'd ever think of such a thing.
The door opened again.
Colonel Melchett's back, said Mary, and that police inspector with him, and they say they'd be glad if you'd join them. They're in the study.
Chapter 11. I saw at a glance that Colonel Melchett and Inspector Slack had not been seeing eye to eye about the case. Melchett looked flushed and annoyed, and the inspector looked sulky.
"I'm sorry to say," said Melchett, "that Inspector Slack doesn't agree with me in considering young Redding innocent."
"If he didn't do it, what does he go and say he did it for?"
asked Slack sceptically.
"Mrs. Protheroe acted in an exactly similar fashion, remember, Slack."
"That's different. She's a woman, and women act in that silly way. I'm not saying she did it for a moment. She heard he was accused, and she trumped up a story. I'm used to that sort of game. You wouldn't believe the fool things I've known women do. But Redding's different. He's got his head screwed on, all right. And if he admits he did it, well, I say he did do it. It's his pistol, you can't get away from that. And thanks to this business of Mrs. Protheroe, we know the motive. That was the weak point before, but now we know it, why, the whole thing's plain sailing."
"You think he can have shot him earlier, at 6:30, say?"
"He can't have done that.
You've checked up his movements."
The inspector nodded.
"He was in the village near the Blue Boar at 6:10. From there, he came along the back lane where you say the old lady next door saw him. She doesn't miss much, I should say, and kept his appointment with Mrs. Protheroe in the studio in the garden. They left there together just after 6:30 and went along the lane to the village, being joined by Dr. Stone. He corroborates that, all right. I've seen him. They all stood talking just by the post office for a few minutes. Then Mrs. Protheroe went into Miss Hartnell's to borrow a gardening magazine. That's all right, too. I've seen Miss Hartnell. Mrs. Protheroe remained there talking to her till just on 7 o'clock, when she exclaimed at the lateness of the hour and said she must get home."
"What was her manner?"
"Very easy and pleasant, Miss Hartnell said. She seemed in good spirits. Miss Hartnell is quite sure there was nothing on her mind."
"Well, go on."
"Redding, he went with Dr. Stone to the Blue Boar, and they had a drink together. He left there at 7:20, went rapidly along the village street and down the road to the vicarage. Lots of people saw him."
"Not down the back lane this time," commented the colonel.
"No, he came to the front, asked for the vicar, heard Colonel Protheroe was there, went in and shot him, just as he said he did. That's the truth of it, and we needn't look further."
Melchett shook his head.
"There's the doctor's evidence. You can't get away from that. Protheroe was shot not later than 6:30.
"Oh, doctors."
Inspector Slack looked contemptuous.
"If you're going to believe doctors, take out all your teeth. That's what they do nowadays. And then say they're very sorry, but all the time it was appendicitis. Doctors."
"This isn't a question of diagnosis. Dr. Haydock was absolutely positive on the point. You can't go against the medical evidence, Slack."
"And there's my evidence for what it is worth," I said, suddenly recalling a forgotten incident. "I touched the body and it was cold. That I can swear to."
"You see, Slack," said Melchett.
"Well, of course, if that's so. But there it was, a beautiful case. Mr. Redding only too anxious to be hanged, so to speak."
"That in itself strikes me as a little unnatural," observed Colonel Melchett.
"Well, there's no accounting for tastes," said the inspector. "There's a lot of gentlemen went a bit balmy after the war. Now, I suppose it means starting again at the beginning."
He turned on me.
"Why you went out of your way to mislead me about the clock, sir, I can't think. Obstructing the ends of justice, that's what that was."
"I tried to tell you on 3 separate occasions, I said, "and each time you shut me up and refused to listen."
"That's just a way of speaking, sir. You could have told me perfectly well if you'd had a mind to. The clock and the notes seemed to tally perfectly. Now, according to you, the clock was all wrong.
I never knew such a case. What's the sense of keeping a clock a quarter of an hour fast anyway?
It is supposed, I said, to induce punctuality.
I don't think we need go further into that now, Inspector, said Colonel Melchett tactfully. What we want now is the true story from both Mrs. Protheroe and young Redding. I telephoned to Haydock and asked him to bring Mrs. Protheroe over here with him. They ought to be here in about a quarter of an hour. I think it would be as well to have Redding here first.
I'll get on to the station, said Inspector Slack, and took up the telephone. And now, he said, replacing the receiver, we'll get to work on this room.
He looked at me in a meaningful fashion. Perhaps, I said, you'd like me out of the way. The inspector immediately opened the door for me. Melchett called out,
Come back when young Redding arrives, will you, Vicar? You're a friend of his, and you may have sufficient influence to persuade him to speak the truth.
I found my wife and Miss Marple with their heads together. We've been discussing all sorts of possibilities, said Griselda.
I wish you would solve the case, Miss Marple, like you did the time Miss Weatherby's gill of picked shrimps disappeared, and all because it reminded you of something quite different about a sack of coals.
You're laughing, my dear, said Miss Marple, but after all, that is a very sound way of arriving at the truth. It's really what people call intuition and make such a fuss about. Intuition is like reading a word without having to spell it out. A child can't do that because it has had so little experience. But a grown-up person knows the word because they've seen it often before. You catch my meaning, Vicar?
Yes, I said slowly. I think I do. You mean that if a thing reminds you of something else, well, it's probably the same kind of thing.
Exactly.
And what precisely does the murder of Colonel Protheroe remind you of? Miss Marple sighed.
That is just the difficulty. So many parallels come to the mind. For instance, there was Major Hargreaves, a church warden and a man highly respected in every way. And all the time he was keeping a separate second establishment, a former housemaid, just think of it, and five children, actually five children, a terrible shock to his wife and daughter.
I tried hard to visualize Colonel Protheroe in the role of secret sinner and failed.
And then there was that laundry business, went on Miss Marple, Miss Hartnell's opal pin. Left most imprudently in a frilled blouse and sent to the laundry. And the woman who took it didn't want it in the least and wasn't by any means a thief. She simply hid it in another woman's house and told the police she'd seen this other woman take it. Spite, you know, sheer spite. It's an astonishing motive, spite. A man in it, of course. There always is.
This time, I failed to see any parallel, however remote.
And then there was poor Elwell's daughter, such a pretty, ethereal girl, tried to stifle her little brother. And there was the money for the choir boys' outing, before your time, Vicar, actually taken by the organist. His wife was sadly in debt. Yes, this case makes one think so many things. Too many. It's very hard to arrive at the truth.
I wish you would tell me, I said. Who were the seven suspects?
The seven suspects?
You said you could think of seven people who would, well, be glad of Colonel Protheroe's death.
Did I? Yes, I remember I did.
Was that true?
Oh, certainly it was true. But I mustn't mention names. You can think of them quite easily yourself, I'm sure.
Indeed, I can't. There is Lettice Protheroe, I suppose, since she probably comes into money on her father's death. But it is absurd to think of her in such a connection, and outside her I can think of nobody.
And you, my dear? Said Miss Marple, turning to Griselda.
Rather to my surprise, Griselda coloured up.
Something very like tears started into her eyes. She clenched both her small hands.
"Oh," she cried indignantly, "people are hateful, hateful. The things they say, the beastly things they say."
I looked at her curiously. It is very unlike Griselda to be so upset. She noticed my glance and tried to smile.
"Don't look at me as though I were an interesting specimen you didn't understand, Len. Don't let's get heated and wander from the point. I don't believe that it was Lawrence or Anne, and Lettice is out of the question. There must be some clue or other that would help us."
"There is the note, of course," said Miss Marple.
"You will remember my saying this morning that that struck me as exceedingly peculiar."
"It seems to fix the time of his death with remarkable accuracy," I said. "And yet, is that possible? Mrs. Protheroe would only have just left the study. She would hardly have had time to reach the studio. The only way in which I can account for it is that he consulted his own watch and that his watch was slow. That seems to me a feasible solution."
"I have another idea," said Griselda.
"Suppose, Len, that the clock had already been put back. No, that comes to the same thing. How stupid of me." "It hadn't been altered when I left," I said. "I remember comparing it with my watch." "Still, as you say, that has no bearing on the present matter."
"What do you think, Miss Marple?"
asked Griselda.
"My dear, I confess I wasn't thinking about it from that point of view at all. What strikes me as so curious, and has done from the first, is the subject matter of that letter."
"I don't see that," I said. "Colonel Protheroe merely wrote that he couldn't wait any longer."
"At 6:20, said Miss Marple, "your maid Mary had already told him that you wouldn't be in till 6:30 at the earliest, and he appeared to be quite willing to wait until then. And yet, at 6:20, he sits down and says he can't wait any longer."
I stared at the old lady, feeling an increased respect for her mental powers. Her keen wits had seen what we had failed to perceive. It was an odd thing, a very odd thing. "If only," I said, "the letter hadn't been dated." Miss Marple nodded her head.
"Exactly," she said. "If it hadn't been dated."
I cast my mind back, trying to recall that sheet of notepaper and the blurred scrawl, and at the top that neatly printed 6:20. Surely these figures were on a different scale to the rest of the letter. I gave a gasp.
"Supposing," I said, "it wasn't dated. Supposing that round about 6:30, Colonel Protheroe got impatient and sat down to say he couldn't wait any longer. And as he was sitting there writing, someone came in through the window."
"Or through the door," suggested Griselda. "He'd hear the door and look up."
"Colonel Protheroe was rather deaf, you remember," said Miss Marple.
"Yes, that's true. He wouldn't hear it. Whichever way the murderer came, he stole up behind the colonel and shot him. Then he saw the note and the clock, and the idea came to him. He put 6:20 at the top of the letter, and he altered the clock to 6:22. It was a clever idea. It gave him, or so he would think, a perfect alibi."
"And what we want to find," said Griselda, "is someone who has a cast-iron alibi for 6:20, but no alibi at all for, well, that isn't so easy. One can't fix the time."
"We can fix it within very narrow limits," I said. "Haydock places 6:30 as the outside limit of time. I suppose one could perhaps shift it to 6:35 from the reasoning we have just been following out. It seems clear that Protheroe would not have got impatient before 6:30. I think we can say we do know pretty well."
"Then, that shot I heard. Yes, I suppose it is quite possible. And I thought nothing about it
Nothing at all. Most vexing. And yet, now I try to recollect, it does seem to me that it was different from the usual sort of shot one hears.
Yes, there was a difference.
Louder, I suggested. No, Miss Marple didn't think it had been louder. In fact, she found it hard to say in what way it had been different, but she still insisted that it was. I thought she was probably persuading herself of the fact rather than actually remembering it, but she had just contributed such a valuable new outlook to the problem that I felt highly respectful towards her. She rose, murmuring that she must really get back. It had been so tempting just to run over and discuss the case with dear Griselda. I escorted her to the boundary wall and the back gate, and returned to find Griselda wrapped in thought. "Still puzzling over that note?" I asked. "No." She gave a sudden shiver and shook her shoulders impatiently. "Len, I've been thinking how badly someone must have hated Anne Prothero."
"Hated her?"
"Yes, don't you see? There's no real evidence against Lawrence. All the evidence against him is what you might call accidental. He just happened to take it into his head to come here. If he hadn't, well, no one would have thought of connecting him with the crime. But Anne is different. Suppose someone knew that she was here at exactly 6:20. Clock and the time on the letter, everything pointing to her. I don't think it was only because of an alibi it was moved to that exact time. I think there was more in it than that. A direct attempt to fasten the business on her. If it hadn't been for Miss Marple saying she hadn't got the pistol with her and noticing that she was only a moment before going down to the studio. Yes, if it hadn't been for that." She shivered again. "Then, I feel that someone hated Anne Prothero very much. I don't like it."
Chapter 12. I was summoned to the study when Lawrence Redding arrived. He looked haggard, and I thought suspicious. Colonel Melchett greeted him with something approaching cordiality.
"We want to ask you a few questions, here, on the spot," he said.
Lawrence sneered slightly.
"Isn't that a French idea? Reconstruction of the crime?" "My dear boy," said Colonel Melchett, "don't take that tone with us. Are you aware that someone else has also confessed to committing the crime which you pretend to have committed?"
The effect of these words on Lawrence was painful and immediate.
"Someone else?" he stammered. "Who? Who?" "Mrs. Prothero," said Colonel Melchett, watching him.
"Absurd. She never did it. She couldn't have. It's impossible."
Melchett interrupted him.
"Strangely enough, we did not believe her story. Neither, I may say, do we believe yours. Dr. Haydock says positively that the murder could not have been committed at the time you say it was."
"Dr. Haydock says that?"
"Yes. So, you see, you're cleared whether you like it or not. And now we want you to help us, to tell us exactly what occurred."
Lawrence still hesitated.
"You're not deceiving me about Mrs. Prothero. You really don't suspect her?"
"On my word of honour," said Colonel Melchett.
Lawrence drew a deep breath.
"I've been a fool," he said. "An absolute fool. How could I have thought for one minute that she did it?"
"Suppose you tell us all about it," suggested the chief constable.
"There's not much to tell. I met Mrs. Prothero that afternoon." He paused.
"We know all about that," said Melchett. "You may think that your feeling for Mrs. Prothero and hers for you was a dead secret, but in reality it was known and commented upon. In any case, everything is bound to come out now."
"Very well, then. I expect you are right. I had promised the vicar here," he glanced at me, to go right away.
I met Mrs. Protheroe that evening in the studio at 6:15. I told her of what I had decided. She too agreed that it was the only thing to do. We said goodbye to each other. We left the studio, and almost at once, Dr. Stone joined us. Anne managed to seem marvellously natural. Oh, I couldn't do it. I went off with Stone to the Blue Boar and had a drink. Then I thought I'd go home, but when I got to the corner of this road, I changed my mind and decided to come along and see the vicar. I felt I wanted someone to talk to about the matter. At the door, the maid told me the vicar was out, but would be in shortly, but that Colonel Protheroe was in the study waiting for him. Well, I didn't like to go away again. Looked as though I were shirking meeting him. So I said I'd wait too, and I went into the study. He stopped.
"Well," said Colonel Melchett.
Protheroe was sitting at the writing table, just as you found him. I went up to him, touched him. He was dead. Then I looked down and saw the pistol lying on the floor beside him. I picked it up, and at once saw that it was my pistol. That gave me a turn. My pistol. And then straight away, I leapt to one conclusion. Anne must have bagged my pistol some time or other, meaning it for herself if she couldn't bear things any longer. Perhaps she had had it with her today. After we parted in the village, she must have come back here and... Oh, I suppose I was mad to think of it, but that's what I thought. I slipped the pistol in my pocket and came away. Just outside the vicarage gate, I met the vicar. He said something nice and normal about seeing Protheroe. Suddenly, I had a wild desire to laugh. His manner was so ordinary and everyday, and there was I, all strung up. I remember shouting out something absurd and seeing his face change. I was nearly off my head, I believe. I went walking, walking. At last, I couldn't bear it any longer. If Anne had done this ghastly thing, I was at least morally responsible. I went and gave myself up. There was a silence when he had finished. Then the Colonel said in a businesslike voice,
"I would like to ask just one or two questions. First, did you touch or move the body in any way?"
"No, I didn't touch it at all. One could see he was dead without touching him."
"Did you notice a note lying on the blotter half concealed by his body?"
"No."
"Did you interfere in any way with the clock?"
"I never touched the clock. I seem to remember a clock lying overturned on the table, but I never touched it."
"Now, as to this pistol of yours, when did you last see it?"
Lawrence Redding reflected. "It's hard to say exactly."
"Where do you keep it?"
"Oh, in a litter of odds and ends in the sitting room in my cottage, on one of the shelves of the bookcase."
"You left it lying about carelessly."
"Yes, I really didn't think about it. It was just there."
"So that anyone who came to your cottage could have seen it?"
"Yes."
"And you don't remember when you last saw it?"
Lawrence drew his brows together in a frown of recollection. "I'm almost sure it was there the day before yesterday. I remember pushing it aside to get an old pipe. I think it was the day before yesterday, but it may have been the day before that."
"Who has been to your cottage lately?"
"Oh, crowds of people. Someone is always drifting in and out. I had a sort of tea party the day before yesterday. Lettuce Protheroe, Dennis, and all their crowd. Then one or other of the old pussies comes in now and again."
"Do you lock the cottage up when you go out?"
"No. Why on earth should I? I've nothing to steal, and no one does lock their house up round here."
"Who looks after your wants there?"
"An old Mrs. Archer comes in every morning to do for me, as it's called." You think she would remember when the pistol was there last?
I don't know, she might. But I don't fancy conscientious dusting is her strong point.
It comes to this, that almost anyone might have taken that pistol.
It seems so, yes.
The door opened, and Dr. Haydock came in with Anne Prothero. She started at seeing Lawrence. He, on his part, made a tentative step towards her.
Forgive me, Anne, he said. It was abominable of me to think what I did.
I...
She faltered, then looked appealingly at Colonel Melchett.
Is it true what Dr. Haydock told me?
That Mr. Redding is cleared of suspicion?
Yes.
And now what about this story of yours, Mrs. Prothero? Eh? What about it?
She smiled rather shamefacedly.
I suppose you think it dreadful of me.
Well, shall we say, very foolish. But that's all over. What I want now, Mrs. Prothero, is the truth, the absolute truth.
She nodded gravely.
I will tell you. I suppose you know about everything.
Yes.
I was to meet Lawrence, Mr. Redding, that evening at the studio, at 6:15.
My husband and I drove into the village together. I had some shopping to do. As we parted, he mentioned casually that he was going to see the vicar. I couldn't get word to Lawrence, and I was rather uneasy. It was awkward meeting him in the vicarage garden whilst my husband was at the vicarage. Her cheeks burned as she said this. It was not a pleasant moment for her.
I reflected that perhaps my husband would not stay very long. To find this out, I came along the back lane and into the garden. I hoped no one would see me, but of course old Miss Marple had to be in her garden. She stopped me and we said a few words, and I explained I was going to call for my husband. I felt I had to say something. I don't know whether she believed me or not. She looked rather funny. When I left her, I went straight across to the vicarage and round the corner of the house to the study window. I crept up to it very softly, expecting to hear the sound of voices. But to my surprise, there were none. I just glanced in, saw the room was empty, and hurried across the lawn and down to the studio where Lawrence joined me almost at once.
You say the room was empty, Mrs. Prothero?
Yes, my husband was not there.
Extraordinary!
You mean, ma'am, that you didn't see him?
Said the inspector. No, I didn't see him.
Inspector Slack whispered to the chief constable, who nodded.
Do you mind, Mrs. Prothero, just showing us exactly what you did?
Not at all.
She rose, Inspector Slack pushed open the window for her, and she stepped out on the terrace and round the house to the left. Inspector Slack beckoned me imperiously to go and sit at the writing table. Somehow, I didn't much like doing it. It gave me an uncomfortable feeling. But of course, I complied. Presently, I heard footsteps outside. They paused for a minute, then retreated. Inspector Slack indicated to me that I could return to the other side of the room. Mrs. Prothero re-entered through the window.
Is that exactly how it was?
Asked Colonel Melchett.
I think exactly.
Then can you tell us, Mrs. Prothero, just exactly where the vicar was in the room when you looked in?
Asked Inspector Slack.
The vicar? No, I'm afraid I can't. I didn't see him.
Inspector Slack nodded.
That's how you didn't see your husband. He was round the corner at the writing desk.
Oh.
She paused. Suddenly her eyes grew round with horror.
It wasn't there that...
Yes, Mrs. Prothero. It was while he was sitting there.
Oh.
She quivered. He went on with his questions.
Did you know, Mrs. Prothero, that Mr. Redding had a pistol?
Yes. He told me so once.
Did you ever have that pistol in your possession?
She shook her head.
No.
Did you know where he kept it?
I'm not sure. I think
I've seen it on a shelf in his cottage. Didn't you keep it there, Lawrence?
When was the last time you were at the cottage, Mrs. Prothero?
Oh, about 3 weeks ago. My husband and I had tea there with him.
And you've not been there since?
No, I never went there. You see, it would probably cause a lot of talk in the village.
Doubtless, said Colonel Melchett dryly. Where were you in the habit of seeing Mr. Redding, if I may ask?
He used to come up to the hall. He was painting lettuce. We often met in the woods afterwards.
Colonel Melchett nodded.
Isn't that enough?
Her voice was suddenly broken.
It's so awful having to tell you all these things, and there wasn't anything wrong about it. There wasn't. Indeed, there wasn't. We were just friends. We couldn't help caring for each other.
She looked pleadingly at Dr. Haydock, and that soft-hearted man stepped forward.
I really think, Melchett, he said, that Mrs. Prothero has had enough. She's had a great shock in more ways than one.
The chief constable nodded.
There's really nothing more I want to ask you, Mrs. Prothero, he said. Thank you for answering my question so frankly.
Then I may go.
Is your wife in?
Asked Haydock.
I think Mrs. Prothero would like to see her.
Yes, I said. Griselda is in. You'll find her in the drawing room.
She and Haydock left the room together and Lawrence Redding with them. Colonel Melchett had pursed up his lips and was playing with a paper knife. Slack was looking at the note. It was then that I mentioned Miss Marple's theory. Slack looked closely at it.
My word, he said. I believe the old lady's right. Look here, sir, don't you see? These figures are written in different ink. That date was written with a fountain pen, or I'll eat my boots.
We were all rather excited.
You've examined the note for fingerprints, of course, said the chief constable.
What do you think, Colonel? No fingerprints on the note at all. Fingerprints on the pistol, those of Mr. Lawrence Redding. May have been some others once, before he went fooling round with it and carrying it around in his pocket, but there's nothing clear enough to get hold of now.
At first, the case looked very black against Mrs. Prothero, said the Colonel thoughtfully, much blacker than against young Redding. There was that old woman Marple's evidence that she didn't have the pistol with her, but these elderly ladies are often mistaken.
I was silent, but I did not agree with him.
I was quite sure that Anne Prothero had had no pistol with her since Miss Marple had said so. Miss Marple is not the type of elderly lady who makes mistakes. She has got an uncanny knack of being always right.
What did get me was that nobody heard the shot. If it was fired then, somebody must have heard it, wherever they thought it came from. Slack, you'd better have a word with the maid.
Inspector Slack moved with alacrity towards the door.
I shouldn't ask her if she heard a shot in the house, I said, because if you do, she'll deny it. Call it a shot in the wood. That's the only kind of shot she'll admit to hearing.
I know how to manage them, said Inspector Slack, and disappeared.
Miss Marple says she heard a shot later, said Colonel Melchett thoughtfully. We must see if she can fix the time at all precisely. Of course, it may be a stray shot that had nothing to do with the case.
It may be, of course, I agreed. The Colonel took a turn or two up and down the room.
Do you know, Clement, he said suddenly, I've a feeling that this is going to turn out a much more intricate and difficult business than any of us think. Dash it all, there's something behind it.
He snorted.
Something we don't know about. We're only beginning, Clement.
Mark my words, we're only beginning. All these things, the clock, the note, the pistol, they don't make sense as they stand.
I shook my head. They certainly didn't.
But I'm going to get to the bottom of it. No calling in of Scotland Yard. Slack's a smart man. He's a very smart man. He's a kind of ferret. He'll nose his way through to the truth. He's done several very good things already, and this case will be his chef d'oeuvre. Some men would call in Scotland Yard. I shan't. We'll get to the bottom of this here in Downshire.
I hope so, I'm sure, I said. I tried to make my voice enthusiastic, but I had already taken such a dislike to Inspector Slack that the prospect of his success failed to appeal to me. A successful Slack would, I thought, be even more odious than a baffled one.
"Who has the house next door?"
asked the Colonel suddenly.
"You mean at the end of the road? Mrs. Price Ridley."
"We'll go along to her after Slack has finished with your maid. She might just possibly have heard something. She isn't deaf or anything, is she?"
"I should say her hearing is remarkably keen. I'm going by the amount of scandal she has started by just happening to overhear accidentally."
"That's the kind of woman we want. Oh, here's Slack."
The inspector had the air of one emerging from a severe tussle.
"Phew," he said. "That's a tartar you've got, sir."
"Mary is essentially a girl of strong character," I replied.
"Doesn't like the police," he said. "I cautioned her. Did what I could to put the fear of the law into her, but no good. She stood right up to me."
"Spirited," I said, feeling more kindly towards Mary.
"But I pinned her down all right. She heard one shot, and one shot only. And it was a good long time after Colonel Prothero came. I couldn't get her to name a time, but we fixed it at last by means of the fish. The fish was late, and she blew the boy up when he came, and he said it was barely 6:30 anyway, and it was just after that she heard the shot. Course, that's not accurate, so to speak, but it gives us an idea."
Said Melchett.
"I don't think Mrs. Prothero's in this after all," said Slack, with a note of regret in his voice. "She wouldn't have had time to begin with. And then women never like fiddling about with firearms. Arsenic's more in their line. No, I don't think she did it."
"It's a pity," he sighed. Melchett explained that he was going round to Mrs. Price Ridley's, and Slack approved. "May I come with you?" I asked. "I'm getting interested." I was given permission, and we set forth. A loud "Hi!" greeted us as we emerged from the vicarage gate, and my nephew Dennis came running up the road from the village to join us.
"Look here," he said to the inspector. "What about that footprint I told you about?"
"Gardeners," said Inspector Slack laconically.
"You don't think it might be someone else wearing the gardener's boots?"
"No, I don't," said Inspector Slack in a discouraging way.
It would take more than that to discourage Dennis, however. He held out a couple of burnt matches.
"I found these by the vicarage gate."
"Thank you,"
said Slack, and put them in his pocket. Matters appeared now to have reached a deadlock.
"You're not arresting Uncle Len, are you?" inquired Dennis facetiously.
"Why should I?"
inquired Slack.
"There's a lot of evidence against him," declared Dennis. "You ask Mary. Only the day before the murder, he was wishing Colonel Prothero out of the world, weren't you, Uncle Len?"
I began.
Inspector Slack turned a slow, suspicious stare upon me, and I felt hot all over. Dennis is exceedingly tiresome. He ought to realise that a policeman seldom has a sense of humour.
"Don't be absurd, Dennis," I said irritably.
The innocent child opened his eyes in a stare of surprise.
"I say, it's only a joke," he said. "Uncle Len just said
that anyone who murdered Colonel Protheroe would be doing the world a service.
Ah, said Inspector Slack. That explains something the maid said.
Servants very seldom have any sense of humour either. I cursed Dennis heartily in my mind for bringing the matter up. That and the clock together will make the inspector suspicious of me for life.
Come on, Clement, said Colonel Melchett.
Where are you going? Can I come too? Asked Dennis.
No, you can't, I snapped.
We left him, looking after us with a hurt expression. We went up to the neat front door of Mrs. Price Ridley's house, and the inspector knocked and rang, in what I can only describe as an official manner. A pretty parlour-maid answered the bell.
Mrs. Price Ridley in? Inquired Melchett.
No, sir. The maid paused and added, She's just gone down to the police station.
This was a totally unexpected development. As we retraced our steps, Melchett caught me by the arm and murmured,
If she's gone to confess to the crime too, I really shall go off my head.